It's time for a solid hour of
Tea Party Power.
And now, here's Al Gore's Midnight Massage Man, Mark Gillar.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. I am your host, Mark Gillar, and we have two gentlemen with us this evening that are going to be discussing anthropogenic global warming. First off, Eric Berger. Eric spent his college years at the University of Texas dreaming about the stars, which led him to an astronomy degree, but he decided studying a particular classification of stars in depth for the rest of his life seemed a bit dull and preferred meeting interesting people to the solitude of the observatories. He dove into journalism, hoping to explain the complexities of science and medicine to the general public. Hoping to interact with readers, he began the SciGuy blog in early 2005, covering everything from hurricanes to space. He's won several awards, including the 2006 Texas Associated Press Managing Editors Award for Best Blog. In 2008, The Chronicle was a Pulitzer Prize finalist in a large measure due to his blogging on Hurricane Ike. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mark.
And your counterpart this evening is Dr. Simon Atkins. He is the CEO of Advanced Forecasting Corporation, better known as AFC, a think tank in planetary risk management. AFC provides climate change hazard consulting for businesses, investors, farmers, and other individuals that are affected by natural-based perils. Simon actually did some broadcasting work himself for NOAA in the Rockefeller office of New York City. He received his Bachelor's of Science degree in Atmospheric Science from Cornell University. He worked on his MBA in Helsinki, and now actually has two doctorate degrees in alternative medicine. Simon, welcome to the show.
A jolly good evening to you and all your listeners, Mark.
And I'll add to that, Eric Berger actually has a degree in astronomy from the University of Texas, just down the road from where I am. And Simon, you are now quickly becoming known as the one person who got Hurricane Irene right.
So yes, thank you. Yeah, and it wasn't just a good guess. We saw that storm come up the East Coast, and there's many, many things that I look for in whether a storm is strengthening or weakening. And this eye was clouding over. It's kind of like when a snake sheds its skin. They become much more desensitive, and in fact, they become weaker. And it's the same thing in many things of nature, and that can really be applied to a lot of things in storms. And as this thing came up the East Coast, it was not strengthening, and I called it before the National Hurricane Center, and I said, this is not going to be a problem for New York in the way that it was being meteorized, if that's a word. As you know, Mark, they were saying that, you know, this is apocalyptic, and that's where I drew the line and said, I've got to say something.
Mm. Well, I know that Joe Bastardi, not to pick on him, but he was on the Sean Hannity show, and they pretty much had everyone thinking that it was the end of the world. So congratulations on pegging that one right. What I'd like to do is tell the listeners a little bit about myself, because it's been probably at least a year since we've covered this topic on the show. I am a big believer that we have to take care of Mother Earth. I drive a hybrid. I recycle my cans. If you go through the downtown area of Bryan, Texas, and see all the trees in the downtown area, my son and I are responsible for planting somewhere between a dozen and 18 of those trees. I have to tell you that I did my first feasibility study on a 100% solar-powered house when I was 14, and I am a big believer that one day we will have to rely on these alternative sources of energy, and I wish us Godspeed in getting to that point. Having said that, I'm also not a believer, or I don't want to say I'm not a believer in, but as far as anthropogenic global warming goes, I actually don't believe it's impacting the temperature or the climate enough to worry about it, and even if it were, we're never going to get China or India to play along, so I don't know that we shouldn't be focusing more on adapting. So that's kind of my take on it. But what I'd like to do is just sort of throw some questions out to you guys, because I know you're on different sides of the fence on this one, and have each one of you give me your take on it. Now, I will say this. Both of you have told me privately that you're not interested in getting into a shouting match or a heated debate. You're both gentlemen, and I'll hopefully put those fears aside right now. I am not the kind of host who likes to yell and scream or cut people off, and I've only been in one heated debate in the year and a half I've had the show. And that was with the Westboro Baptist Church woman who was a major homophobe who was going on and on about, you know, different people deserving to die and calling people various names. And I think my friends on both sides of the political spectrum gave me a free pass on losing my temper that day. So that's the only time I've ever lost my temper on this show. So let me just throw this out, and I'll go with Eric first because I don't want Eric to feel like he's getting beat up on today because Simon and I are both skeptics. Eric, how much do you believe CO2 is impacting our temperature and our climate at this particular juncture in history?
As you mentioned, I'm not a climate scientist, but you know, there's a strong belief among a lot of scientists that I talk to, people who I know personally and professionally, that CO2 has had a major effect on the changes in the climate we've seen over the last 100 years. And so can they put a precise percentage on it? No, they can't. The science, frankly, is not 100% known. We don't know all of the factors that play into climate, but we know enough of them, scientists believe, to say with some confidence that CO2 is predominantly responsible for the warming.
And I'm guessing, Simon, you have a different opinion. Share your views with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I am a climate scientist, and this is my subject matter in and out every day. There's many, many, many different parameters that contribute to temperature cycles and to carbon dioxide cycles and all kinds of things. But I think what's important is we have to look at the big picture. And, you know, when we go out and we ask general questions to, high school people is, you know, how does the planet get heated up? It's by the sun. And there's a lot of research coming out now that is really going the opposite way to the last, let's say, 10, 15 years of research, that says that solar parameters, solar energy, has a gigantic effect on the planet's temperature cycles. Now, if you want a concise number, I have essentially brought out all the different factors of how climate is going through these cycles like tides. And 59% is caused by the solar and cosmic effects. About 29% is terrestrial and atmospheric, meaning volcanoes, marine current aberrations. We have sandstorms. It's actually inclusive of the Earth's rotation. And then 9% is anthropogenic. And let me break that down for you. That is urban heat islands with obviously population increasing. We have deforestation. We have technology that changes the electromagnetic fields. You might want to check out HAARP up in Alaska. And then the fourth one under that anthropogenic is human pollution, including radiation from Japan and other sites around the world like Chernobyl. That actually changes. But you know what sort of grabs me in the pants? Is that we are focusing in on...
We're trying to run a family show here, Simon.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I was going to take that analogy further, but I'm glad I didn't.
No, that just stopped you.
if I may reply to that.
Sure, go ahead.
Well, I haven't finished, if I may. Let me just finish that sentence, Eric. Essentially, sure. What we focus in on as a society is that carbon dioxide. And we are putting a number on that of 0.8% of the total effect of how that carbon dioxide gas affects temperature cycles. So 0.8%.
Okay, that's a pretty precise number. Can I ask, there's a couple points I'd like to respond to, but first
sure,
of all,
go ahead.
You know, the second most important greenhouse gas in the atmosphere is carbon dioxide. Can we agree on that?
Well, water vapor
is... You think the first is water vapor?
Yes, water vapor is the first.
Okay.
So carbon dioxide is the second most important greenhouse gas in the atmosphere, has gone up 35% in the last 5 or 6 decades. How can you say that that has had no effect on the planet's temperature?
Well, it's a good question, and everybody needs to know this, that the last 100 years of the planet is like a millisecond over the course or the history of the planet. And what they've done, Eric, and for the listeners out there, is they've taken these ice cores out of Greenland, and they've gone back thousands of years. And they've actually found out through sedimentation on the ocean's trench floors and all other kinds of different ways, like rock paleontology, is that they found some fascinating evidence that says that carbon dioxide levels were superior, much higher, even 2,000 years ago. And so we've got to look at
Simon,
the big picture compare it.
Can I ask how much higher?
Well, there's basically, let's say that we're at approximately 400 parts per million now, 400 ppm. Approximately 10,000 years ago, it was 2,000 parts per million. And in the dinosaur era, it was 10,000 parts per million.
And what do we know about the temperature during those times then, if it was that high?
Well, we know that it was much higher during the dinosaur period, but there were significant ice ages. And if you look at the temperature scale, there has been extraordinary numbers of ups and downs. In fact, what happened is that the changes in the temperature preceded the changes in the carbon dioxide concentration. And in the Al Gore Inconvenient Truth film, this error was actually in court, and the judge and Al Gore essentially agreed that this was a major error in the film.
Okay, Simon, I'm going to go to you next, and then we'll go back to Eric. I'm kind of flip-flopping.
Could I just follow up with one thing on that?
Sure.
So, yes, historically, climate CO2 levels were higher. The point I was trying to make is that they've gone up 35%, and he was just saying that that had had no effect on temperature. Just the other thing I'd like to point out is that Simon talked about solar radiation. And it's my understanding that really hasn't changed since 1978, when satellites really first started measuring the total solar irradiance. And so if the sun hasn't been putting out, you know, more measurable energy since then, I'm not exactly sure how the bulk of the warming that we've observed on a global level could be attributed to the sun.
Yeah, Eric, what I say with due respect is that we have to stop focusing on from now through 1978 or the last 100 years. I mean, history of Earth is enormous, and we can go back 1,000, 2,000, 100,000 years and see the sedimentation. We can see the pollen count. We can see ancient trees. And it shows us very clearly that even the medieval warm period, okay, that was 1,000 to about 1,250, that it was warmer in 1,300 A.D. than it is now. And you know what I have to sarcastically say, with all due respect, is I don't remember too many factories back in 1,300 A.D.
Okay, well, let me jump in.
Let me finish up on that, Mark. The original question was what had happened over the last century, and so I don't dispute the fact that to understand the present climate, we need to understand the past climate. But he was attributing the warming this century to the sun, and since we've been measuring the sun for the last 30 years, it hasn't changed. But anyway, please go on, Mark.
No, I was actually going to play devil's advocate with Simon here for a minute. You'll hear a lot of warmists put forth the idea that the medieval warm period was regional and not global. And I hear that a lot.
Well, it was in the northern hemisphere. If you take, obviously there's not many records there. The reason why they focus on Europe is because they took the ice cores out of Greenland. Now, they do take the ice cores out of the Arctic and the Antarctic, and they show more of a global change in the warming and cooling period. The point that we have to focus back to is in the last 4,500 years, there's been scientifically agreed upon 75 major temperature swings. And we have to focus on why that happens. My main research has showed that it's the solar irradiance and the solar sunspot activity that's the overwhelming dominant force of this temperature cycle shift.
If you guys don't mind me asking, I'll share my age first. I'm 48. How old are you guys? And I have a reason for asking.
38.
Yeah, I'm 42, so I guess I'm in the middle.
You're in the middle. Okay. I think perhaps, Eric, you're not going to be old enough to remember this. And Simon, I don't know that you would be either. And I don't know that you were in America at this point. But when I was a young man, I was born in 63. And when I was a young man in the early 70s, there used to be this news show that would come on. It was called In the News. It was directly aimed at kids. It was put on by a gentleman who's no longer with us. His name is Christopher Glenn. He was with CBS for years. And they would talk to us on Saturday mornings about the coming ice age. Some of the same scientists who bought into the coming ice age back in the 70s were later pushing the global warming theory, and frankly, we were continuing to increase CO2 back in the 70s, yet we saw a decline in temperatures. So I'll throw this to Eric. If increased CO2 means warmer temperatures, why was it that scientists tended to agree back in the 70s that we were heading into a cooling spell?
That's my understanding of the ice age is that was a relatively limited number of scientists who were putting forth the theory, and the theory got tossed aside pretty quickly when it was, realized that wasn't the case. I mean, this is how science works. Scientists generally do not move together as a herd on an issue. You'll have different groups putting forth different theories, and then there will be evidence either supports that theory or does not support the theory, and then it's thrown out. So the fact that there was a group of scientists in the 1970s throughout there was an ice age and that they got some press because it was a pretty good story doesn't surprise me. It also was, set aside pretty quickly. I just don't see how this sort of limited subset of scientists who had an idea back then somehow disproves an idea today that has a lot of evidence and pretty good agreement among the scientists who spend the most time studying it.
Yeah, Mark and Eric, if your listeners go to a source called Soon, SOON, in 2004, I remember this clearly because it was so easy to understand. He did a correlation between solar variation in the amount the sun shines and how much the Earth receives and global climate. And he found an 82% R-squared correlation. In other words, 82% of the time when the solar radiance went up, the temperature went up. When the solar cycle went down, temperature went down. And yet he only found a 22% correlation between carbon dioxide and global climate. And that is just fascinating because it really says the big picture about what's the driver. Let me continue with this one fact, and then we can go to the next thing, I think. During the past 1 million years, there's been 8 to 9 ice ages, each about 100,000 years long. So that's 800 to 900,000 years already taken at that 1 million years. And what's happened, what they've found, climatologists have found, is they're interspersed with short, warm interglacial periods, each of only 10,000 years duration. All right? And all of this, guess what it goes back to? Cosmic ray flux. It's just a fancy word for solar energy and other cosmic radiation. It's fascinating, and this is all coming up now in the news with CERN, C-E-R-N.
Eric, do you want to respond to that before we go into something else?
Well, you're talking about the European Particle Physics Laboratory?
Yes.
Yeah,
fascinating
CERN
stuff.
Is coming up in the news, but it's because they're now delivering the most powerful accelerator beams in the world, having surpassed the Tevatron in Chicago, and they're closing in on the Higgs boson. There are a lot of scientists looking at data and collecting data at CERN, and I understand what you're talking about, that there was some discussion of solar radiation, and I think it was determined that it did play a minor role in the temperature we've seen, but that has not changed the general view among scientists that CO2 and human activity has been the predominant reason. Look, there are lots of reasons why temperatures change. There's lots of natural variation. There's no question about that. What scientists are arguing is that there has been a measurable effect by CO2 from human activity superimposed upon that has had a thus far modest effect on temperature of about 1 degree Celsius, 2 degrees Fahrenheit. But there's a concern that if you tip that temperature another 1 or 2 degrees, you set off some other processes that could accelerate the warming. That is the theory in a nutshell.
I want to take a shot at that, if you don't mind, Simon.
Sure.
Again, we have pretty good evidence that the planet Earth has been warmer than this on several occasions, most recently the medieval warm period. We didn't hit any of those triggers at that point. Why are we going to do it now?
Well, the medieval warm period, I think there's been, you know, some analysis of that, and there's I think the view is that on a global scale, the temperatures weren't quite as warm as they are now. Obviously, we didn't have a lot of thermometers around the planet at the time.
Right.
And I think that the belief is maybe that the warming was confined to the northern hemisphere.
But there were
let me go back. Let me go back. In the medieval warm period, there were no thermometers. Period.
Okay. Yeah, very good. I was just sort of, you know,
I just wanted
you know,
to
maybe
make
there
that
was
clear.
A Da Vinci or somewhere out there that had you know created a thermometer. But I understand what you're saying. There were no thermometers. But the point I think is that yes, the planet has been this warm in the past. It's been warmer in the past. The concern is that it's going to continue to warm as we you know don't slow down. In fact, put more CO2 in the atmosphere. And then at some point you reach some triggers, some negative feedbacks that start pumping more. And I'm thinking of things like, you know, releasing the permafrost or the methane in the permafrost in Siberia, increasing the albedo by removing the ice cap in the summer on the, you know, the Arctic Ocean, those kinds of things that would help increase or accelerate the warming. And that really is where there is some debate in the scientific community about how significant that additional warming would be. If you continue rising CO2 levels, it's going to add another degree or two Celsius to the warming. The concern is that you might get these feedback mechanisms that add another 2, 3, or 4 degrees Celsius, which would really have some negative implications for the planet.
So
and why has NASA just said that since 2008 we've had global cooling? It just came out this year.
NASA didn't say that per se. Some scientists did come out, and there was an acknowledgement, and I wrote about it on my blog, that, hey, you know, there was a period in the 2000s where the planet did not warm appreciably, but it looks like that the warming is picking up again. Like this, most scientists will agree that most atmospheric scientists will say that, you know, there are these natural cycles. And so there were some La Niñas and stuff that had helped cool off the 2000s. But there's some good evidence now that the planet is, you know, continued to warm over the last few years.
Okay.
Well, in the last 30 months, Eric, you know, the planet has cooled, scientifically observed, 1.3 degrees Fahrenheit. It's the steepest cooling in 85 years. And why people are saying that that's not true is because more thermometers, okay, the actual recording instruments that we just talked about, they're being placed more frequently at runways in major cities. And the IPCC reports, which is the main reports that are saying about this global warming, they're saying that they're only taking New York, Rio de Janeiro, London, and they're not using hardly any rural areas which show beyond a shadow of a doubt that the temperature is actually cooling in the suburbs and in rural areas.
That cooling temperature that you speak about has not been observed, to my knowledge, by the satellites that do the remote sensing, and that includes the work of Roy Spencer at the University of Alabama, Huntsville, who's no warmest by any stretch of the imagination. So I'm not sure where that dramatic cooling that you talked about comes from, Simon.
But
well,
do you want to respond to that? Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, no, I was just going to say I had a quick layperson's observation, if you guys don't mind me sticking that in. What I've noticed is that whenever it warms, the skeptics tend to say, well, it's part of natural variation. And whenever it cools, the warmest tend to say, well, that's just natural variation. You do realize how silly that looks to those of us in the middle who aren't scientists. It looks like both of you are conveniently going to natural variation when the temperature isn't heading in the direction you want it to.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, you know, what I'm stressing is that the urgency that we should be as a population coming together on this is that we could be causing technologically too much of a cooling that could really get us into problems. For example, I just saw an article today saying that meteorological engineering techniques are likely going to go into effect, and that includes putting reflectors in the atmosphere to shine back the sun. I tell you, that is the scariest thing that I have ever heard in meteorological science, because it could produce a rapid cooling. And I just pray that we don't do something that silly.
Eric, well, you were going to say something in response to my remark. Go ahead.
Oh, about natural variation.
The natural variation.
I think there's a lot of confusion on both sides, and people make fun of one another for attributing weather to climate and climate to weather. You know what I would ask you, Mark, about that is you're in Bryan, Texas, you said?
I am.
Okay. So you're like Houston, you guys have had a really warm summer, setting all kinds of records, and in Houston we've had the driest summer on record. For the first time in Texas this year, four cities had an average temperature above 90 degrees. Before this year, that had never been recorded. And obviously, that's weather, and that's not climate.
Right.
Climate scientists say that, you know, this is the type of weather we could expect, you know, on a normal basis in 70 to 80 years when we get toward the end of this century. And I would just ask you, as someone who is obviously concerned about the environment, does the possibility that might be true, that this might be the kind of weather we experience, would that be, you know, troubling to you, or do you think to your descendants?
Well, to be honest with you, what I did when Dessler's piece came out kind of attacking Governor Perry for his disbelief in anthropogenic global warming is I contacted a meteorologist that I know named Joseph DeLeo, and he pulled the NOAA records right back to day one. And over the long haul, it seems like even though we may have broken a few records recently, the curve looked pretty flat to me. And even Dr. Dessler acknowledged that climate change doesn't drive weather events. I understand where you're coming from, and I do care about the environment, and I don't think we should quickly dismiss something this important. I mean, trust me, I don't. But at the same time, we set a lot of cold weather records recently, too, throughout the United States. And just like people are quick to point out that they don't believe the medieval warm period was global, and what we're talking about here is global temperature, I don't believe that when we're talking about global warming, we should just focus on what's happened in Texas. So that's my answer.
There is such a sort of a two-sided argument here. Eric, you're on the shorter term. You're focusing on the last 100 years. I'm focusing in on the Earth's history and saying that us humans have only been here for a blip of time. How can we be so egotistical to think that we have that huge, amazing effect on the planet, especially when we have changes in the albedo or the reflectivity? We know that polar ice has a cycle of about 30 years that goes along with solar cycles. There is water vapor cycle changes. There are volcanoes. There are all these other types of things. How about Milankovitch cycles that we haven't even talked about? That's the way that the Earth wobbles. I mean, all of this has such a dramatic effect on the Earth's climate. And my beef is that how come we're focusing in on just carbon dioxide? I mean, if we want to talk about technology, how about we talk about HAARP? How about we talk about heat island effects? How about we talk about deforestation? I mean, where are those in this big picture?
Deforestation is certainly a big issue, and I will definitely agree that the urban heat island effect plays a significant role. The reason, obviously, we're talking about the here and the now is because that's when we live, and the decisions that we make now are going to affect, you know, the people down the road for the next 30, 50, 100 years or quite a bit longer. As I said earlier, understanding the past is important to understand the future, but you know, the fact is that humans have increased the level of the second most important greenhouse gas in the environment over the last century by 35%. And to think that that would have no effect on the environment, it doesn't speak to common sense. I mean, this is a greenhouse gas. It helps trap radiation reflected from the surface of the Earth. And it's going to have some kind of warming effect. How much? We can't say precisely. We certainly can't say 0.08%, I don't think. We just don't understand all of the climate enough to make that determination.
Hey, Eric, hold on, Simon, let me go in. What we used to hear back in the 70s is that it was capturing radiation from the sun before it could get to the surface. And also, there's the whole issue of the missing heat spot, if it's actually acting as a true greenhouse effect. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm not quite sure what you're getting at, Mark. I'm sorry.
Well, no, if you have a greenhouse, heat rises, and there's a hot spot near the top of the greenhouse because of that. We've been looking for the hot spot in the atmosphere for a long time, and no one's been able to find it, suggesting that perhaps there isn't a true greenhouse effect as we would think of it. Simon, feel free to jump in. I may be butchering this, but...
I apologize, Mark. I'm not familiar with that line of reasoning or argument in the issue.
No, that's
fine. Did you want to talk at all about the, you know, what could be done or not done about the issue? Because I think Simon and I probably agree on that.
Well, that's sure, why not? We've only got, I know you've got to put some kids to bed. Why don't you go ahead and dive into that area? I had a whole lot of other things I wanted to talk to you guys about, and hopefully you guys have been comfortable enough with each other that I could have you both back again sometime.
Yeah, this has been fun. I've actually enjoyed it. I think part of the real issue with climate change is that it's almost an intractable issue to solve. To really make a meaningful effect, and if you go by what the scientists think, you would have to cut our carbon dioxide output, and that's just with the current technologies and our energy needs. That's a very difficult, if not impossible, thing to do. We just don't have, despite what Al Gore says, we don't have the technologies right now to really meet the limited emissions that we need to do on an economic basis. Our energy prices would rise, and it's a difficult economy, and so it's difficult to pull that off. And then you put superimpose upon the geopolitical layer that one country, one continent can't do it by itself. So even if the United States were to take the step of saying, okay, we're going to limit our greenhouse gas emissions, there's no guarantee whatsoever that the other major developing economies, China, India, Brazil, a lot of these other nations that are also seeing increasing levels of greenhouse gases would go along. And so, you know, you would have this strong, powerful economic argument that why should we hurt our economies when those other countries are. And so, you know, I think that's where a lot of the opposition ultimately comes from, is that the solutions that it would really take to address this problem are not easy, they cost a lot, and they put the United States at a disadvantage. And so a lot of people reflexively say, well, the scientific argument must be wrong. I think it's just a reflection of the fact that the solutions are not easy.
Simon?
Yeah, Eric, I must say, with all due respect, look, you've got a position, you know, with a lot of followers online, and you've got to essentially make sure that what you're writing down in every single sentence is scientifically correct. You've got to get advisors from both sides, and you've really got to look at the sunspot solar parameter. I don't see anything regarding that. I don't see anything going back more than 100 years. And that's where I think you and I have our major differences. I've been doing this for 25 years, and I have clear evidence that shows that while we may agree on urban heat island effect and deforestation, just focusing in on carbon dioxide is nothing more than a scheme of taxation. That's right. You heard me right. It is a taxation scheme because everybody does it. Everybody breathes out carbon dioxide. And you know what? You may have it right that in a couple of years, the IRS is going to be putting on our sort of sheets that we have to fill in each year how much was our carbon footprint. But I tell you what, I think in a couple of probably 3 to 4 years, all of this science, especially from CERN, will prove that it's correct, that the amount of carbon dioxide is probably less than 1% of the planetary temperature cycle.
Okay, you've both made your positions very clear. Can I count on both of you gentlemen to come back at a future date?
Thank you, Mark. Thanks,
yeah.
Eric, for coming on.
My pleasure.
Eric,
Simon,
I really
you.
Appreciate you being here, and hopefully you feel that I remained somewhat objective enough that you didn't feel like you were being pounced on by two skeptics.
Not at all. I enjoyed it, Mark.
Fantastic. By the way, I like your writing style a lot. I've had the chance to become more familiar with you since initially contacting you, and you do a great job. I'm not surprised you won all those awards.
Thank you. Great.
Thanks, you again, Mark. Good night.
Thank
Eric.
You. Pleasure speaking to both of you.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillar, a production of the Conservative Broadcasting Network.